Hi everyone, I'm Gary Naw. Today we're going to begin by looking at a compound in seaweed that has anti-cancer properties. Then we're going to look at the Mediterranean diet and how it helps us reduce the risk of dementia. And then how meditation and music improves quality of life, especially as you get older and your cognition begins to decline. And then a new study aims to break the taboo surrounding spirituality. And then red meat, well, not good, and I'll explain why, especially for your heart. Always, the information comes from the National Library of Medicine. These are all peer-reviewed journals from respected institutions. For example, we go with the Medical University of Graz, which is in Austria, an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. After they took a systematic review of a meta-analysis, meaning they look at many different studies to see if there's some commonalities that can lead us to believe that something is better or less than better. What they found was there is a natural occurring substance. It's called PEA, and it has a long chemical name, but it's a naturally occurring fatty acid, amide, that is first isolated and described back in 1957. And what it does, it has a lot of important properties, and it comes from soybean, lecithin, and peanuts, and it has anti-inflammatory properties. It was later isolated in other body tissue. So in this there were 11 double-blind randomized controlled trials to show that it really turns off inflammation. Now, why is this important? Because in this case, it was arthritis in your joints, knee arthritis, irritable bowel syndrome, and other disorders. So neurological diseases are based upon inflammation. So the key is the more inflammation we have, the more challenged our DNA become. Now, the science behind this is not exact, but it's enough to let us know that if we continue to take in to our body or be exposed to pro-inflammatory agents, for example, just living where there's these 5G towers or having a smart meter on your home or on your apartment building, that penetrates right through the brick and steel and it ends up going into your body. But your body's not brick and steel. Therefore, you're getting bombarded nonstop with the type of the either ionizing radiation or non-ionizing radiation, but they both disrupt and damage your DNA. All the DNA in the body, the heart DNA, the brain DNA, your eye DNA, your lungs, your kidneys, your cells. So in some hypersensitive people, they have environmental illnesses specific to electromagnetic pulses, where it means their body's inflamed 24/7. But what if you don't know that the cause or one of the causes could be the tower on your building? Remember when I was in New York not long ago, we were running around Central Park and I looked up and I saw all the buildings clear around Central Park had these towers on them. Then you walk down the streets and you see towers also. And you see a lot of trees cut down because the trees block the signal. So you have taken away thousands of trees, you put in these towers. So why? Because if you used cables, you wouldn't have electromagnetic pulse. You wouldn't have this toxic energy. But people want to make it easier, so they want wireless. But wireless has a big danger. To get the communication from point A to point B, where it's originating up to a satellite, from the satellite down to your car, to your cell phone, to your computer, that creates a huge amount of energy, and that's a toxic energy to the environment, to animals, to you. But then we get propagandized. You saw all the ads. There was ads on every single program nonstop for about a year about 5G. And the New York Times was one of the sponsors of that. But what you don't see are the 10,000 scientific studies showing that it's dangerous. You don't see the documentary out of Great Britain by one of their major stations where they went into a school just a normal school, and they put meters that measure these electromagnetic pulses where a child would sit at a desk in their proximity to the computer to the child. Every single desk was dangerous. It fell into the danger zone. So then they went backwards, all right, out the hallway, down the hall, down the steps, out the door, across the field, and it was still dangerous. So the question is, what has been done since then? Were the computers taken out, or were they given hardwired computers? No. Nothing's been done. So we have a phenomenon that is not unusual. It's like many of the hearings in Congress, where the legislators have 5 minutes to make their case. More often than not, it's not to ask legitimate questions of the people being asked, are our airplanes safe today? Do we have a really good quality backup system in our financial industry to make sure that no one's over indebting themselves in the banking system, which later could cause the bank to fail and then have to be bailed out? No, we do not. We will have committee hearings. We'll have people who say they're overseeing things, but does anything actually change? Remember in 2008 when everyone got a liar's loan, or a lot of people got liar's loans? In fact, most of those loans, the people were not making the income they said they would to justify the high mortgage they were given. So the mortgage brokers who were making a commission lied. The banks backing that up were lying. Excuse me. Many of the people involved in giving us the value, the assessors of the property, overstated the value of the property, because if your property's valued an apartment or house at $1 million, you might be able to get a $700,000 mortgage. But what if your house is really valued at $400,000, you're getting $700,000? So you see, everyone in the industry was participating in a scam, all to make money. And then when the person making $38,000 a year suddenly had a $500,000 mortgage and couldn't pay it, then everybody starts pointing the finger that they're a victim and something should be done. Hundreds of hearings were held. Not a single thing has been done. We're right back to where we were. We have another real estate bubble, both in rent, where people are paying astronomically high rents. And who are they paying it to? Local landlords? No. Major corporate investors. Vulture capitalism at its worst. I'm giving this as a background because one thing is showing that there is a problem. Another thing is solving the problem. We're really good at pointing the problem out from different perspectives, but that's also tainted based upon our biases and our pre-existing conditioned responses. So if you are conditioned to believe that anything a Republican says or anything a Democrat says is not going to be honest or accurate, then that shields you from having to take any responsibility for finding any truth in the other person. Even if there's 5% of what someone's saying is truth, why don't you look at that 5% and say, what can we learn from that 5% since we've already rejected 95%? But how often are we open enough and neutral enough we can actually hear what someone's saying? Rarely. There are those in our society who can do that. Rarely are they in a position of power. And that's unfortunate, because when I tell you that their 5G is dangerous, and I wrote 14 articles, all scientifically cited with quality peer-reviewed studies, and I had people on my program who, like Deborah Day and others, who actually can show you the harm it does to people. And I personally, with even one of my staff who was suffering from environmental problems, couldn't sleep, all kinds of health issues, depressed immune system, until a simple question. Did this person know that on their building was a smart meter? When they found that out and moved, then suddenly those symptoms cleared up. But if you're a person, if you're a regular doctor and you're not trained in environmental medicine, and you don't understand the impact of electromagnetic pulses, then you're going to think that person's just suffering from some kind of psychosomatic problem. It's all in your brain. No, it isn't. It's real. Remember when people had golf horse syndrome and restless leg syndrome and chronic fatigue syndrome? It's not real, but it was. But they weren't smart enough or had the knowledge to see it. So therefore, all those people start getting psychiatric medication instead of being helped. So we're at a place in our society where we have to take a moment and ask, why are we so sick? And the answer is because we are surrounded by so many things that create our environment and in our food and our water that create within us inflammation. Look at all the ads on television for any event, especially sporting. The two things they're asked to really overindulge in are huge amounts of processed foods and meats, causing cancer and other diseases, and alcohol. Now take the two together, and that's generally what people do, and you've created a disease process. Now keep repeating it on a regular basis, and you've created the diseases from the process. And by the time you realize that you have caused a problem, you can't figure it out. I don't know why I'm sick. I don't know why I have cancer. I don't know why I weigh 100 pounds more than I should. There's three ways I look at this. First, did you want to know the truth of why you are where you're at? The answer is no, in most cases. Are you willing to change if it means getting out of your comfort zone? The answer is absolutely positively no. People don't change unless they're forced to, and then reluctantly, and then they generally go back. And thirdly, if it meant that you could have a whole new way of living, a whole new lease on life, a whole new way to look at the world so that you're not creating problems for yourself, inflammation, but you'd have to give up all this stuff. Are you willing to do that? And then you start getting this, well, let me do one, I'll take a B vitamin once a day, but I'm still going to drink. I'm still going to eat the meat. I'm still going to eat the sugar. I'm still going to be, but do nothing to change the underlying cause. I see. And you're the person that's supposed to give us some solutions to our current dynamics with the environment, with our body politic, with the World Economic Forum, with the vaccine mandates, with anything else that's important to us? No, that's not going to happen. And we're not capable or mature enough as a society, including all of our experts, to acknowledge this. We are really dysfunctional with intent. Who knew, they'll say. Oh, who knew that smoking was bad? Did you want to know? Would you have stopped? John Wayne said in one of his last interviews, when he was just a shell of his former self, and he was dying, and he was told he was dying, and he had met an actor, Michael Caine. Caine gave this in an interview, and he said, you know, it's those damn cigarettes. Of course, everyone knew it was the cigarettes, but who wanted to give it up? I've spoken with a lot of people, including every member of my own family. Every member of my family smoked. A little bit of smoking was 2 packs a day. A lot of smoking was 4 packs a day. One person actually smoked 5 packs a day. I never saw them without a cigarette. They had the fingers that were all, you know, yellowish and ashtrays overflowing everywhere. And yet, if there was ever discussion about smoking, well, you know, I know someone that lived to be 80 and smoked all the time. Yeah. Are you willing to look at how many people tried to live to 80 smoking all the time and died when they were much younger? The answer is once again, no. So we need a national conversation on why we are so completely maladaptively dysfunctional. And until we can have that conversation, no other conversation has any relevance whatsoever. It's just wasted verbiage. So all the information on health in the world is meaningless if a person's not willing to engage it or to try it. What is the purpose of being angry with a politician knowing that most are sociopathic and their tendencies selfish in the extreme? Why would you blame a bank for mismanaging your money knowing the banker's there for one reason only, making money for their shareholders? So when they make mistakes, you're blaming them. Why not change the system? Why not change any system? I'd like your answer on that. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. And different tribes, and that's what we don't have in the United States. We have thousands of different tribes, the people living in one of the beautiful gated communities in Florida where they have golf courses and Tennyson and dinner parties and classes. Very nice. Now ask him how many of them went out to a demonstration against something that they felt was wrong. How many of them are making some sacrifice in their life to protect the environment or help people who are suffering? Well, that tribe doesn't have to. We did our work. We earned our money. We earned it honestly. And therefore, it's someone else's responsibility. So, the bigger picture. We got 3,000 people showing up for demonstration against the war in a country of 335 million people. And it was well publicized. The media didn't cover it. When it did, Rachel Maddow, doing what she does typically, she slanted it that, you know, these were fanatical pro-Russian people. Not true at all. But why don't we want to see by our own actions change occur that is necessary? We're at the tipping point at every aspect of life, and we can acknowledge that. Why not? I'd like your input. So if you can't acknowledge any of that, how likely are you going to stop drinking and eating stuff that causes inflammation in your body? And then when you do get the arthritis, you're looking for a drug, not a change in your own lifestyle. That is just too radical. That's why I said yesterday, one of the most important medical voices in American history is Dr. Dean Ornish. He is a true American hero. I've known him for over 40 years. I was the first person to ever film him and put that into a documentary, but I also went side by side with him in a national debate with others on the role of being able to reverse disease using diet. No, that's not possible. Yes, it was. He did it. They didn't. They weren't smart enough. And yet that message, we can save at least 75% of the people who are dying from heart attacks and stroke if we make these changes, published in two of the five most important journals in the world. So it wasn't as if it was a secret. It wasn't as if a doctor and cardiologist didn't know what he had done. It wasn't as if the lay public didn't know what he did. They didn't want to use it. So the next time someone says, well, show me a better way. Oh, we've had a lot of very good people showing a lot of better ways, and none of them have been acknowledged or used. What does that say about everyone? I'm interested in your answer. 888-874-4888. So I could tell you about a lot of things that can turn off pain, including PEA, and it's easy to get. Generally, 300 to 1,200 milligrams a day was all that was necessary over 10 days to start seeing changes in pain. But add that to the other 10,000 pieces of information that people don't use, and not in a context to change the underlying problem, but change the symptoms. From another university, this is in Chile, La Frontera, a compound in Wakame, W-A-K-A-M-E, that's a seaweed, commonly available, inexpensive, is found to have anti-cancer properties. So I went back and I looked in our archives and I was looking at our show notes, because we print all of our show notes, and once a week on Monday from the Gary Nall newsletter, which John LaBelle, my good friend of over 40 years, is putting together, we put all the citations. So if you miss something because you missed a show, or maybe you didn't get everything I was saying, you can go back and you can read these on a Monday. We put everything, and we have over 80 different things that can help prevent cancer. Now, if each one by itself was statistically significant, imagine if you use four or five of these. Imagine if you use curcumin and quercetin and vitamin C and modified citrus pectin, and now we add in Wakame seaweed. It's a staple in the Japanese diet. It's often served along with other dishes and soups and stews. It's a compound that's in the seaweed that's been discovered to exhibit anti-cancer fighting properties. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Marine Drugs and elaborated on the compound. The compound is called fucoidin, F-U-C-O-I-D-A-N, which makes it a well-known source from the Wakame. And so you know, they looked at other things like the sea cucumber and the tubular sea cucumber, also sources of this same chemical. But those are more difficult to find. But the seaweed is easy to find and easy to consume. So just one more thing to help us. By the way, there were the authors from three universities in Chile found that this chemical, let me spell it again, F-U-C-O-I-D-A-N, prevents metastasis, the spread of cancer cells from a tumor site to other parts of the body, by binding to the receptors outside these cells. And with this binding to the cancer cell receptors, then it helps stop the cancer from spreading, metastasizing. And also they found that this chemical from the seaweed inhibits hypoxia, meaning blood oxygen levels that are lower than normal, which is not good. And by the way, with people who are sick in bed, they're compounding their problem. Whatever it takes to get that person's body moving, do it. On a stationary bike, in a swimming pool where there's not the pressure on the joints, and especially those who are obese, swimming or walking in the water is very good. But you've got to get your blood oxygen level up, and that helps. But this wekame inhibits hypoxia, the blood oxygen levels that are lower than normal, and especially in the area surrounding a tumor. And insufficient blood oxygen levels can promote the spread of cancer cells in the body. That's why I'm not going to go through my cancer protocols, but I've had pretty good results and far better. Especially, remember, I'm working with terminally ill people, meaning their oncologists have given them up. I just saw a medical record last night. In fact, we're reaching out to a particular hospital where one of America's more respected oncologists gave a person a stage 4 cancer diagnosis and then had all the MRIs and everything. And the person was sitting in the bed 4 weeks and refused chemotherapy, refused radiation, it was inoperable, so there was no surgery. So I wanted to see what exactly were they doing in those 4 weeks, charging this person to be in bed, knowing that that person was going to die. Why didn't they just suggest the person goes home, put their life in order, seek hospice care, give them some palliative drugs that could help them if they're in excruciating pain? So at least they're not just sitting in a bed. So I'm waiting on those to come. They're coming today. But when they say there's nothing more we can do, the mind says there's nothing more that can be done. And then our media encourages there's only one truth. If your oncologist says there's nothing can help you, then you're going to die. If your cardiologist or your neurologist or your kid's psychiatrist says your kid's got autism, there's nothing that can be done. Okay, they are right. I will not argue that, but that doesn't mean there's nothing that can be done by other people. And there are lots of good therapists in this country who are able to help people using different therapies, a different approach, and getting outstanding results. And yet the media has never once acknowledged this. Even to this day, if you go up on Wikipedia, you're told that traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, homeopathic medicine, naturopathic medicine, and all the other yoga, mindful meditation. I mean, this is insane. But the media supports that. The scientific community supports that. I can show you over 100,000 studies on library medicine supporting all the things I just mentioned. So it's not just the science show that it exists. Yes, it does. But those in power can't profit from it and control it, so then it doesn't exist. And the media, being the lapdogs that they are, they do what they're told and paid to do, propagandize. I'm just giving this as background because just telling you about bean sprouts is not going to save you. Also, by the way, from Newcastle University in the United Kingdom comes a study about the Mediterranean diet. It's associated with a decreased risk of dementia. And they have seafood. They have lots of fruits, lots of vegetables, lots of nuts, and lots of beans, more beans than most people in this. This was published in the British Medical Journal. So if you have dementia, if nothing else, you have a 23% lower risk of dementia than those who did not consume the Mediterranean diet. So get onto the Mediterranean diet. By the way, it's not too late, even if you have a condition, to reverse it or improve it. And also from West Virginia University comes a study about meditation. Meditation and music improve quality of life for older people with cognitive decline. So I think that's very important that we try to create some settings where you're giving people as much of the complementary input, beautiful settings, an animal to be around, a cat, a dog, wherever the environment is, that's very important, birds, something that they can keep occupied with. And music is one of the things that helps them be occupied. So some degree of memory loss is common with age, minor, if you're aging right, because you're not inflaming the brain. But then can you reverse that? Yes, you can. So this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. And by the way, there's an interesting study at the University of Southern Denmark. Do you ever think about what happens when you die? Whether we have a soul, what the meaning of life is? This and much more is what new research is shedding light on. For example, 100,000 Danes were invited to participate in the largest questionnaire survey ever conducted on spiritual and existential needs. They were asked 20 questions, all related to these topics. And over 80% of those who responded reported experiencing at least one strong or very strong spiritual need in the past month. The first study based on the important. So people are asking about these, and the older people get, the more they start asking, because otherwise there's inevitability. What if there was a meaning to life I missed? What if there was something I could do at a spiritual level, connect with, that could open a door that has been closed? And we never have these conversations in the United States, whether we're afraid of them or some other reason, but we should spend more time on understanding the spiritual lesson of life. I'll do more on that. In fact, I'm going to be doing a lot of that at our upcoming health retreat. And finally, from the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom, red meat is linked to worse outcomes in heart failure patients. Why? Because there is a chemical. It's called trimethylamine, and with higher risks of death in chronic heart failure when you're consuming meat, because that's what's being released into the body. So just saying, you're not going to see any studies on why meat is healthy. It is not. Why it lengthens life, it doesn't. It shortens it. Why it prevents disease, it causes disease, colorectal cancer, estrogen-bound cancers, the breast and the uterus. So everything you could say that's against something is in the scientific literature. Nothing good, all bad. And yet, that's the basis of every popular diet and what people are craving and eating more of now than ever before. How do you figure that? That's the power of perception. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come right back because I got some really interesting stuff to share with you. You can always go to prn.live and look at all the different information that's available, or garynoll.com, because I publish a lot of stuff that I don't get onto the air, but I do on my site. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. One of the daily listeners of this program is named, her name is Diane Addison. She's a private chef, very highly sought after out in California in the Los Angeles area. And I remember years ago when I did a big lecture, in fact, there were so many people, I was a fundraiser for KPFK where I was on for 33 years. I believe Roy has still been playing my show. I don't raise funds for him, but he plays the show. He and I have been friends for a long time, 40 years now. But it was in this place I had never been. Of all the hundreds of times I've been in Los Angeles, right in the middle of the town, there's this hill that you go up, and it goes up and up and up and up. And at the top of this hill is this old mission, and it was turned into a a teaching facility, a school, but it's absolutely beautiful, just drop-dead beautiful. And you can see all around you, if you walk around it, I'm guessing it's about 4 acres up there, but it's way above everything else, so you can see all of Los Angeles and the valley, the whole thing. And I had more people turn out for the fundraising. We had about 1,400 people, 1,400 people. So they had a theater. And so I looked at all these people, and Roy says, we got a lot of people out there. In fact, Summer Reese and her mother and family were there. And she said, what are we going to do? And I said, okay, simple. So I walked outside, and here were all these vendors that had come just, you know, to support people and make a few bucks making their own homemade dishes. And they were all vegan, which was good. And the people seemed very conscientious, and I was talking about their hygiene, et cetera. And Diane Addison was one of them. And I said, well, look, why don't you feed all these people? And I told the people, it's on me, okay? I'll pay for your meal and hang out for 2 hours. You've got a beautiful environment to hang out, and then we'll do a showing for you, and I'll do a lecture for you as well. So it went over beautifully. And everybody was happy. At the end of it, people got the premiere of a new film. They got a great lecture. And then all these people outside. But she was the one that I remember because she had the most interesting and creative and original dishes. And she sold hundreds of them. And so I'm very supportive of people who start their own business and home-based businesses. But she says every time I go to a commercial, not a commercial break, but a break, and play the music that I select, she stops what she's doing in the kitchen, starts dancing. Good for you. You know, and if I could get up from my studio here, I'd do dancing as well. So I'll keep the dance music coming your way. I've got some interesting different clips for you today. I want you to hear this one. It's only 60 seconds long, and I'd like your thoughts on it. This is from Tulsi Gabbard about Nancy Pelosi and what she got away with, and what every member of Congress got away with. And we should all ask ourselves, why should something be legal for them and illegal for everyone else? This is the craziness of what legislators do to benefit themselves at the exclusion of anyone else. Let's go to the clip. Clip number 5, please.
From 2019 to 2021, for example, there were over 3,700 examples of trades, stock trades, from members of Congress from both political parties that posed a potential conflict of interest for their own personal profit and the work that they're supposed to be doing on behalf of the American people. The American people deserve better than this. They deserve better than to have this blatant corruption being thrown in their face with literally zero accountability. And the fact that these people think that they are special, that they are superior, and that they deserve special treatment that no one else gets. And the sad part, Jesse, is they actually do get this special treatment. They're all part of this permanent Washington elite club where they scratch each other's backs and look out for each other. And they really don't care about the best interests of the American people. I think an example of this that I saw recently, you know, the guy who sat in Pelosi's chair, he is facing up to 47 years in prison. What he did was stupid, wrong, should not have happened. But look at what Pelosi is doing sitting in that chair, what she has gotten away with.
That's
making
a great point.
Tens of millions of dollars for herself from 2019.
Not millions, over $100 million. Imagine that, $100 million. But every member of Congress, with no problem, can do insider trading. And remember this. Remember when one person, well-known, had her own television show, very popular, she didn't do insider training. She lied about it to the FBI, and she went to prison for it. Martha Stewart. Mind you, she didn't go to jail because she did insider trading. She just lied about it. And yet, here are people who do it. Now, how they do it? Well, it's simple. Let's say that you sit on a committee, and this committee handles mergers and acquisitions. So two banks are going to merge. And you know that. And you know it a week before it's going to be announced to the public. You buy up the stock in both banks. And suddenly, that when it's announced, then people rush in thinking that's a good merger, and especially institutional investors, and they buy. You've just made yourself millions of dollars by doing something that is illegal for everyone else. This is what I'm suggesting is wrong with everything that we do, especially the government. Two sets of standards. Just saying. I'd like your opinions on any of these topics we're taking on today. Also, now I'm going to go to something that we needed to have a discussion on, and that is that it is irrefutable now. We have so much evidence. In fact, we have so much evidence that I have an exclusive interview tonight at 7 o'clock with one of the smartest scientists in the world. His name is Dr. Fleming. He's both a board-certified MD in cardiology, where he has actually innovated cardiological medicine to save lives, and he's known for that. He's also a PhD in the hard sciences, the molecular sciences. He's also has a JD, Doctor of Jurisprudence, and he and other individuals that they're working with have now sent exculpatory evidence to all 50 states' attorney generals and to all 50 governors, showing that groups of individuals, organizations, systematically conspired when it came to COVID, and they had the proof. They've collected voluminous material. Now, I want to get this validated before we had him on, and he's been sending stuff, and it's all been validated. But this is just one, and this goes, what he's going to say tonight goes far beyond what you're about to hear. But this shows you how you've been lied to. And who's telling us this? A conspiracy nut? You know, some right-wing person? No. This is the former CDC director giving testimony under oath. He broke rank. He wasn't supposed to do this. And why did Dr. Redford, who is a virologist, publishing peer-reviewed journals, professor, why was he excluded from all the phone conversations, from all the meetings? He tells you the truth, and yet the mainstream media refused to have him on and just instead attack. And he was the person who was there when it came to being on the committee on COVID. So this is what the people of America don't know, of how dark and dirty everything about COVID was. Listen to his response under oath. It's a short interview.
I now recognize Ms. Maliotakis from New York for 5 minutes of questions.
Thank you, Chairman. For 2 years, myself and the other Republicans on this subcommittee connected the dots. We exposed the evidence supporting our strong belief that COVID was developed and leaked from the Wuhan lab. And during those same 2 years, the same Democrats that sit on this committee, they only hindered, they obstructed, they refused to hold hearings and get to the truth. Now we see mounting evidence supporting the COVID-19 originated from the lab in Wuhan, China, run by the Communist Chinese Party. And this hearing is about getting to the truth. I thank the chairman for making this the very first hearing, because the American people, who have seen just as many fellow Americans die from COVID, as nearly as many die from COVID, that died in every war since the American Revolution combined, deserve to know the truth. Dr. Redfield, you pointed to the lab leak theory even before we did. In mid-January of 2020, you expressed concerns to Dr. Fauci, to Jeremy Farrar of UK's Wellcome Trust, and to Dr. Tedros of World Health Organization that, quote, we had to take the lab leak hypothesis with extreme seriousness. And you urged Dr. Fauci to investigate both the lab and the natural hypotheses. Shortly thereafter, on February 1st, Farrar convened a meeting of a group of 11 top scientists across 5 time zones and asked Dr. Fauci to join, and he wrote, quote, my preference is to keep this group really tight. Obviously, ask everyone to treat in total confidence, unquote. Dr. Redfield, you were excluded from this call, but up until then, you had been on every single, you were included in every other conversation. What changed? Why do you think that you were excluded from these conversations?
Thank you very much. I think just to emphasize, in early to mid-January, I did have multiple calls with Fauci, Farrar, and Tedros about how important I thought it was that science get engaged in aggressively pursuing both hypotheses. I also expressed, as a clinical virologist, that I felt it was not scientifically plausible that this virus went from a bat to humans and became one of the most infectious viruses that we have for humans. All viruses are not the same. So when you look at coronaviruses for SARS and MERS, for example, when they entered the human species, which they did via an intermediate, they never learned how to go human to human. Even to this day, they don't know how to go human to human. So you can't equate Ebola with a coronavirus.
Now, why do you think you were excluded from those calls?
Because it was told to me that they wanted a single narrative and that I obviously had a different point of view.
Okay. In emails following the conference call, four of the 11 scientists told Fauci that they all found the genetic sequence inconsistent with expectations from evolutionary theory, basically what you're saying. However, just 3 days later, these four scientists had drafted a paper arguing the exact opposite, and that's now the infamous proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2. Our investigations show this paper was prompted by Dr. Fauci, among others, with a goal to disprove the lab leak theory. What is the likelihood that these scientists came across additional information just 3 days after making these statements to conclude with such certainty that COVID-19 came from nature instead of the lab leak that they thought it was 3 days earlier?
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate. Again, I've said this before, that this whole approach that was taken on February 1st and subsequently in the month of February, if you really want to be truthful, it's antithetical to science.
Thank you.
Science has debate, and they squashed any debate.
Thank you. Given what we know now and looking at all the conversations in February of 2020 and before the release of the paper, do you think that Dr. Fauci used this paper to hide the gain-of-function research created, this virus?
I can't talk about Fauci's motivation.
Do you think that the paper does hide the truth?
I think it's an inaccurate paper that basically was part of a narrative that they were creating. Remember, this pandemic did not start in January at the seafood market. We now know there was infections all the way back into September. This was a narrative that was decided that they were going to say this came from the wet market, and they were going to do everything they could to support it, to negate any discussion about the possibility that this came from a laboratory.
I got 20 seconds left. Dr. Fauci was affirmatively told in an email that NIAID had a monetary relationship with the Wuhan Institute through EcoHealth Alliance. He was told this in January 27th of 2020. Do you think that Dr. Fauci intentionally lied under oath to Senator Paul when he vehemently denied NIH's funding of gain-of-function research?
I think there's no doubt that NIH was funding gain-of-function research.
Is it likely that American tax dollars funded the gain-of-function research that created this virus?
I think it did, not only from NIH, but from the State Department, USAID, and from DOD.
I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Okay. So what he just told you, and he was the head of the CDC, which was more important than the FDA. He was overseeing everything. And yet he was kept out of the loop. Once he made his feelings clear that it had to have come, it would have come from a lab, not from nature, but he would keep an open mind. Then here's something you don't know, but you're going to know tonight, because I've seen the research. I'm going to ask the questions on this. And I don't ask softball questions. If anyone has ever heard my interviews, they're really hard questions. For example, Fauci lied. That week, he's nailed on lying. But did you know that that letter that came out in The Lancet, signed by all these scientists, that it had to come from nature, not a lab, that Fauci was one who orchestrated that, in effect, edited it, but his name isn't in it? So then he turns around and says, but there's an article in The Lancet. Well, all these highly esteemed scientists say it came from the wet market. It didn't come from a lab. And he leaves out, oh, and I created that. And oh, all those people got millions upon millions upon millions of dollars immediately thereafter into their research projects. Oh, but that couldn't be anything but a coincidence, right? We found the truth. We had the transcripts. The unredacted is what Fleming has and his lawyers and people. Their whole house of cards is gone. For example, there's an Australian outstanding researcher, like the Seymour Hersh of Australia, who found that has never been shown in the United States yet, and I'm having her on, 60 articles Anthony Fauci caused to be written in projects where it was all through gain-of-function research, and it was working with the Chinese Communist Party's Defense Department. So then we went looking at the 99 PhD scientists working for the Defense Department who were never mentioned, and everything was scrubbed. But they were only doing military gain-of-function research to weaponize the virus in the same lab. And they were using the materials from Dr. Barrick from the University of North Carolina and Echo Alliance. And yet those articles where it was mentioned, this is being weaponized. Why would the Defense Department of China be doing anything to make it a safer world? That's not what they do. That's, none of this was done for this reason. They weaponized it. And what about the other 23-plus gain-of-function laboratories, biological laboratories in Ukraine? Who put them there? Why are they there? What are they doing? And what about all the other ones around the world? Why was the American public and scientific community and media never told these existed? This has nothing to do with about making it the world a safer place. This is all about biological weapons. And think of this for a moment. I'm giving you this because the censorship to try to keep any dissenting opinions out of scientists, physicians, heads of the CDC, have you just heard? This is what the media could have found if they had at least been open and honest and allowed other people on who had a voice. Top orthodox pro-vaccine doctors and scientists all banned, all attacked. Even on Pacifica, people didn't want to hear the shows I was doing. Well, hello here. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have taken your vaccines. I'm saying that you were told you would be supported if you took the vaccines or not. Yet you condemn people who did not get the vaccines. Well, let's just take a look at 5 points that are irrefutable now. You claimed, Rachel Maddow claimed, that if you take the vaccine, you won't get infected, you won't spread the infection, you won't go to the hospital, and you won't die. Lies. They had never done the research. And we just found that out about 4 months ago, when at the European Union's special conference investigating COVID, the president of one of Pfizer's divisions says, we never did that research on showing it would be stop infection. And yet that was the purpose of all of the don't allow people from other countries in, and you and everybody had to have a vaccine card to get into a special environment. And the worst of them all was in Israel with the vaccine apartheid system they had, and virtually everything the Israelis did was wrong. That's not an exception. And unfortunately, we were lied to about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine. We were lied to about using remdesivir. Do you know right now, I'm going to be breaking a story, maybe even tonight, about we looked at all of the research on remdesivir. That's the only drug given to everyone in these ICUs. And we believe it represents a whole new iatrogenesis, that most people died not of the virus, but of iatrogenesis. The wrong treatment. What was the primary treatment that almost everyone got? Intubation. I mean, you got your lungs weren't working. You had lower oxygen levels. They should have put you on hyperbaric oxygen. That would have saved those people. But that would have been good science. They didn't do it. And look at the people that got hyperbaric and oxygen therapy directly instead of the therapies they were giving. That's called iatrogenic death. That will be the next step to happen, where you start seeing that the way we treated people or refused to treat people, had we done it right by using the drugs at the beginning, at least 90% of the people would be alive today. They said that the PCR test was accurate. We showed that it was not. And I had the longest interview ever done with the discoverer who won the Nobel Prize in Science, Dr. Kerry Mullis. And he said, it's a very good test if amplifications are at 13 or less. What was the average amplification that you got, everyone in this audience got? 40 to 44, meaning none of that was legitimate. None of it, 100% false. So everyone who is being told by the New York Times that you're a case, no, you weren't a case. You were given a fraudulent test at the amplifications. And hence, almost everybody was testing positive. So you used the wrong diagnostic methods at the wrong amplification. Had you used it at 13, it would have been beneficial. And then you were quarantined. You shouldn't have been. And then in countries like Sweden that didn't quarantine but stopped medical care as frequently they did in Great Britain. In Great Britain, they had over 100,000 prescriptions of one tranquilizer that was so strong it's what they use at end of life to allow a person to die, and they used them all up. That's 100,000 deaths. And we stopped giving heart disease treatment, diabetes treatment, dementia treatment, cancer treatment to people who would be alive who died because they did not have the medical treatment that would have saved their lives, because it was being saved for younger people. Everything that was done was wrong. We were right on every point. They were wrong on every point, and yet they don't have the decency to say that, okay. Now, you can't say you were wrong and learn a lesson. That's up to you. So understand something. Everyone will see this through their own perception. We all have filters. And what allows something to come through a filter is ultimately what it means. The masks were not effective. We now know that from the Cochrane Group. But we were telling you that all along. And the danger from masks that would shred and come into your breathing, the high levels of carbon dioxide and the lack of oxygen. Think of all the brain damage we've done to people because of that. So there's one case where groupthink really got it wrong. And when those people who got it right have all been condemned, what does that tell you? I'd like to hear your response. 888-874-4888. When all the orthodox doctors, orthodox scientists got it right when they were questioning, and yet they were all condemned, every single one, no exception, no matter how outstanding their pedigree at the table, including the former director of the CDC, as you just heard. Well, Anthony Fauci, the walls are closing in on you. You will not escape responsibility, nor will all the journalists at the New York Times, nor will all the journalists at MSNBC who were smart enough, educated enough, and had the resources to know the truth if you chose to see it. But your ideological reference points didn't allow you to see the truth. You gave us instead lies. By the way, just to show you how altered people's perceptions, Luann said that she's been flooded with calls of people saying, oh, Gary's got a health retreat coming up in this anti-aging thing, and I've got my mother, I got my brother who've got terminal cancer, and you know he's going to cure all these people. No. And that's where people are not listening to what I'm saying. I said the following, that we just had phenomenal results, unheard of results. I'm not saying that. The scientists and those associated by reviewing the science that came after that, and I had nothing to do with that. I didn't see the final results. They were done at a university in their anti-aging division with the blood chemistry they did and the methylation DNA tests. And they said, what you've done, no one's ever done before. So I said, now let me do it my way, because I was restricted in the supplements and some of the things I did. I think I can add more years onto a person's life. We added one person 6 years onto their lifespan. That is documented. It is irrefutable. It is 100% set in stone. We've done what no other person has ever done in history. We added biological 6 years of aging. The average person, 2.5 years. But what if we didn't have all the people who were sick? Because what we didn't do, we did not screen out people who had pre-existing conditions until they got there, and we found out you didn't tell us you had this condition and this condition, this condition. But in spite of that, we still helped them and we helped the average lifespan. So what would happen if we only had healthy people, older healthy people? Then our results would be much, much higher. So I said that we are screening out, not in, out. You cannot come if you're sick with a serious illness. I don't care if you get a little blood pressure or diabetes, we can bring that down without a whole lot of difficulty with lifestyle. But if you're sick with cancer, you're sick with heart disease, you're sick with advanced Alzheimer's, you will be excluded because we're doing it based upon the standards of having at least people in the group healthy. So I want to share that with you because for some reason she's thinking people are hearing, and again, this is filter, that, oh, if I'm sick, I can go to Gary. No, I help sick people every day, 7 days a week. But in this study, I don't want sick people in because it will tip the balance for all the people who are healthy. Let's just say you got 20 people who are very healthy or at least healthy. They don't have any obvious illnesses. And you got 20 people who are very sick. And the 20 people who are healthy do really well. And the 20 people who are very sick, they're not as sick, but they don't do so well. In science, you can't just exclude one and use the other. They're brought together as an average. So now the average is not statistically significant, yet for the 20 who are healthy, it's extremely significant. And that's why the standards to get into the new study are so important. We're not allowing anyone to come who has some comorbidity. All right, just want to share that with you. It's time for your calls. 888-874-4888. And we're not on BAI anymore. We're going up to the hour. You do not want to miss tonight's show. Whoa. It's an exclusive. No one else in the world has it. Dr. Fleming decided to share this information on my program because of all the work that we've done and the fact that we only have on people who we feel have something of quality to share that can make a difference. All right? And if the calls don't come in, I want to play one last short clip here. And let's just play. No, I'm looking at the clock. I don't want to run into Eutrice's time. Tomorrow, I'm going to deal with the bank foreclosures and what they're not telling you. I believe this is all going towards the government bailing in. These banks, when the government goes in and takes over all the bank and its assets, but also all of its liabilities. Remember what he said, I'm going to make this 100%, you know, nobody's going to lose a penny. Do you realize 90% of the people in the bank out in California had over $250,000 in their account? Okay. So the government comes in and rescues them, including multimillionaires, including billionaires, because this is the fund, the bank that a lot of them use for venture capital. And then he says, well, we're going to fire all those people. He said that. And then this morning is all the people are staying and they're getting a 50% increase in salary. Well, how is it all the people that caused this, that the government knew about last week and J.P. Morgan knew months ago that they had $18 billion exposure? How is it that you're keeping all the people? So nothing you're being told by the government makes sense, except where I think this is all going, that they will see many other banks, because there are probably hundreds of other banks that would fail or will fail. And so we're right back to 2008. But this time, they can bring in digitized currency, meaning no cash, outlaw cash. That means they control 100% of your wealth, at least in the bank. That's not good. And that's not something we should accept. And I'm going to get into all this tomorrow in the actual debt that we owe. But for right now, we want to have a nice transition. Please listen tonight. It will be an eye-opener. And I'll look forward to sharing with the rest of you on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.